Presuming after this morning's introduction, we can move right on. A quick review of how we work our way up in density functionals. We start out with the local spin density approximation, and then the question is, should you add in the gradient expansion in the gradient of the spin densities? So I'm going to give various tests in this talk, and we'll start out giving tests on main group elements. Main group says everything except transition metals, lanthanides, and actinides. So it's most of organic chemistry and a lot of biochemistry. So here I've got various databases, and I use reasonable basis sets, and I won't talk about those details. So here we have a typical database for bond energies, a typical database for barrier heights. Hartree-Fock theory gives huge errors. All of my errors will be in kcals per mole. There's a translation for those who prefer physicist or European units. Local spin density doesn't do very well, and if you take the expansion to second order, this is an example of doing that, it's still not useful enough. So we have this idea, goes back to 1986, Perdue and Becky, of a generalized gradient approximation. Instead of using the gradient expansion, where the coefficient of the second order term would be 0.12, you make the enhancement factor for the exchange, which is very important, be a function of rho, the density, and s, the normalized gradient density. But you determine it empirically or by some sort of a choice of which constraints to enforce. And you typically get these factors you heard about this morning, about a factor of 2 too high in the gradient dependence. And this now starts to give more accurate results. And then if you go and add a hybrid, for example, the Becky three-parameter Li-Yang-Par functional that's widely used in chemistry, you start getting your bond energies below a kcal, and your barrier heights at least start to be usable. And so that's with your 25% exchange. And so the 1993 marked a turning point in chemistry. And chemists, here's a diagram not too long ago, a review of the chemistry literature, 80% of the people using B3 lip, and the rest of it spread out among other people. So B3 lip we take as a standard. If your functional can do as well as B3 lip, it must be useful because this is being used. Okay, so but popular functionals, so that's a review of the first so many years of density functional theory. Popular functionals have deficiencies. So the work I'm going to talk about today began with our 2005 functionals. We were working on functionals before that, but that's when we felt we made a little bit of a breakthrough. So no functional prior to 2005 is good for both barrier heights and transition metal bond energies. Just another way to say that dichotomy we heard this morning between molecules and solids, geometries and energies, another way to think of it. So the best functionals for organic chemistry are actually bad for transition metal bond energies and vice versa. Most functionals prior to the last few years are bad for barrier heights, period, and also bad for non-covalent interactions. We heard a lot about that this morning, especially this pi-pi stacking, which has dispersion-like interactions. Standard functionals are terrible for charge transfer excitations. We heard a little bit about that this morning. And we also heard this morning that putting in Hartree-Fock exchange can raise the cost. So especially for complex systems, DFT with Hartree-Fock exchange is sometimes too expensive and sometimes just not available in the program for many applications. Okay, so the ingredients of a density functional, again, something we heard a little bit about this morning, so I don't need to spend a lot of time on it. Hartree-Fock exchange is orbital dependent. Density functionals that include Hartree-Fock exchange are typically called hybrid functionals. And you can see that when this hybrid potential, this non-local potential operates on an orbital, you need to know that orbital. You integrate over R2 here, and here's phi I. You need to know that orbital over all space. So the next step in orbital dependence, again, we heard about this morning, is to let the density functional depend on kinetic energy density, which is another orbital dependence. And those are called metafunctionals. And the functionals that I'll be talking about today are metafunctionals in one case, and in the other cases, they're hybrid metafunctionals that have both of these types of dependence. And the main reason for the metafunctionals is this practical one about the fact that the hybrid ones aren't available in some programs, and when they are, they can be expensive, except for small molecules. So how do we develop new functionals? Well, we try to get improved functional forms. We mix in Hartree-Fock exchange. That's a functional issue. We use the kinetic energy density. And we heard this morning about this idea of isolobal regions, regions where dominated by a single orbital shape. You could also say one electron regions, So tau can be used to distinguish one electron regions, and you can get rid of self-correlation and self-exchange in those regions with tau, not just with Hartree-Fock exchange. You can use the GGA exchange, which contains effectively some static correlation, near degeneracy correlation, left-right correlation, non-dynamical correlation, multi-reference correlation, whichever is your favorite term for that. You can use GGA exchange and tau to tame self-correlation, I talked about that, and to try to control this static correlation, which is one of the real advantages of density functional theory over wave function theory, is that you build in this static correlation in the density functional exchange. And once you've improved the exchange, I believe that exchange is a very big number compared to correlation. Once you've improved the exchange, it no longer covers up deficiencies in the correlation. You no longer need to rely on cancellation of errors in exchange and correlation. You can try to improve the dynamical correlation on its own right. So that's the way we think about our strategy. We then have semi-empirical parameters in our density functionals, and we test them and refine them on various databases. Unlike many of the density functionals developed by chemists, we developed our density functionals looking at transition metals as well as the main group. And we use a lot of data that is sensitive to medium-range correlation energy, like barrier heights and non-covalent interactions. Originally, we used some of this just for testing. Now we sometimes use it when we parameterize the functional as well. And this gives us a suite of density functionals. We call them Minnesota 2006, or MO6, MO6-2X, MO6-L for local, MO6-HF for Hartree-Fock. We had some earlier versions in 2005. And so those are the functionals that will form the basis of my talk. And Carpenter has more than one saw, so we have more than one density functional. You wouldn't ask a carpenter to do all of his jobs with the same saw. And so we feel that we're allowed to have more than one density functional. So here is our primary density functional, Minnesota 2006. It has no suffix. And it has 27x is always the percentage of Hartree-Fock exchange for us. This has 27% Hartree-Fock exchange. We call this our desert island functional. If you go to a desert island and you really can only take one saw with you, take this one. So it's our best compromise for everything. If you know, though, that you aren't going to have multi-reference systems, systems that have extreme near-degeneracy correlation, like transition metals, ozone, a few biradicals in organic chemistry, you can do much better for main group chemistry without transition metals, especially barrier heights, if you double the percentage of Hartree-Fock exchange. Now, in previous functionals, if you took the percentage of Hartree-Fock exchange that high, you often could make one thing good, but it was a cancellation of errors. Many other things would get bad. But we feel that our exchange is more accurate, it's more consistent with accurate Hartree-Fock exchange, and we can go higher without having a problem. We eliminate problems for charge transfer excitations. You heard about those this morning. If we go to 100% Hartree-Fock exchange, it was stated for a long time that 100% Hartree-Fock exchange, you wouldn't be able to get good functionals because the functionals rely on cancellation of errors between density functional exchange and correlation, but we actually can get good results with 100% Hartree-Fock exchange. And then there's this practical compromise, get the best performance without Hartree-Fock exchange. We have what we call MO6 local, which means there's no non-local Hartree-Fock exchange in it. Okay, so let's talk about non-covalent interactions. We heard about those this morning. In fact, two different talks mentioned the S22 benchmark database from Pavel Hobson and coworkers and Jiji Spooner. This has accurate interaction energies for 22 different compounds. And this was considered one of the big deficiencies of DFT. And here's a bunch of functionals, pre-2005 functionals. And here's their mean unsigned error on this database. TPSS, BLIP, B3LIP is on here somewhere, right here, same line as B97.3. And Hartree-Fock has pretty bad for this database. And MP2 was considered pretty good, and 1.6. And none of these pre-2005 functionals actually can compete with MP2. But our MO6-2X is actually 3.5 times smaller error. And we get this without adding in any explicit dispersion. We get it because we think we have the medium range correlation energy right. And so we do 3.5 times better than MP2. In fact, our whole suite of density functionals does at least a factor of 2 better than MP2. So we think we've solved some of these problems, at least at van der Waals minimum distances. You know, at the van der Waals minimum, the long-range dispersion is not really have its long-range form anymore. It's definitely a region of overlap. by the fact that it's a minimum, the gradient of the attraction must be equal to the gradient of the repulsion. So the repulsion is by no means negligible. And so this is a region where DFT has a chance to work. It certainly won't work in the standard formulation, unless you use the Langreth formulation, in regions where there's no overlap. And so it does appear that one can make it work. So here's just an example. Rather than these mean errors across databases, here is the tyrosine phenylalanine. It's got pi-pi stacking. It's got heteroatoms, so there's some electrostatics. Binding energy versus functional. Best estimate from accurate calculations, 5.3 kilocalories. And here we see some of the traditional density functionals, PBE, BLIP, B98, hybrid functionals here. Jan Martens from Israel, they basically don't give the binding. In fact, some of them give very negative. In other words, repulsion by 3 kcals instead of binding. Here's our four MO6 functionals. Here's our MO5 2X was starting to get in the ballpark. So we're doing quite well on these kind of non-covalent interactions. And we've done quarnine dimer, and we've done graphene interactions. And and we've done fullerenes, we've done C70, we've done carbon nanotubes. Seems to be working pretty well. Okay, bond association energy. So I talked about the fact that it's difficult to get the standard functionals to work for transition metals. Here's some dramatic examples. Here's two transition metal bond energies, one involving vanadium, one involving copper, this with fluorine. Here's best estimates of the bond energies. Here's the hybrid TPSS from Purdue and Scuseria. Gets close, but still 24 kcals is unacceptable. And as you raise the fraction of Hartree-Fock exchange, B3-lip has 20%. You start making very terrible errors in some of these bond energies. PBE with 25%, very terrible errors in some of these bond energies. So bond energies are less accurate than the main group, and especially for the functionals that do well for organic chemistry. So can we fix that? Okay, so a question we have is, can we make a broad-based functional, a single functional that does well for all four of bond energies in the main group, barrier heights in the main group, non-covalent interactions? I'll show it on the slides with S22, but we have other databases, including databases that have rare gas dimers, zinc dimers, those are van der Waals molecules, and we have very weak interactions, and our functionals seem to work reasonably well for small molecules as well as large molecules. Transition metal bond energies and reaction energies, we use two of our databases, and we also use a database from Furkey and Purdue to test that. Okay, so here's B3-lip, the very popular B3-lip, 20% Hartree-Fock exchange. Actually, even on the GGA level, even on the hybrid GGA level, with no kinetic energy density, work has progressed. This is David Tozer's from a few years ago, even though it has a strange name, B97-3, it's only a couple years old. David Tozer's functional, 27% Hartree-Fock. And you see that David Tozer does better for bond energies. He does better for barrier heights, still not very good for non-covalent. But you see, here's the trade-off you get. When you improve the main group bond energies and barrier heights, you make yourself much, much worse for transition metals, 17 kcal error. So it's really useless for catalysis. Here's MO6, our desert island functional, 27% Hartree-Fock exchange, pretty good for bonds, pretty good for barriers, not as well as we can do when we do the 2X. Pretty good for non-covalent interactions. You've seen that before, and we're starting to get some useful accuracy on transition metals, which are just intrinsically harder. Now, significant savings are provided by working without Hartree-Fock exchange. John Purdue gave a number, I think based on plane wave codes, maybe like VASP, of about a factor of 100 more if you put in Hartree-Fock exchange, and that sounds reasonable to me. Here's a reasonably large molecule. It's a fullerene porphyrin complex, 104 carbons, 34 other atoms. If you run a local functional on that, it takes 17 hours. If you run a non-local functional, it takes 250 hours. Of course, that's, you know, if you run it on many processors, you can get turnaround faster than that, but that's how many hours of computer time. So here's the best previous local functionals prior to our work, TPSS from the Purdue group, VS98 from Scuseria's group. In other words, they're local functionals, 0% Hartree-Fock. And you see, you can do okay for bond energies, but it's very hard to get the barrier heights right. The non-covalent interactions aren't so good. And transition metals are better than B3-lip, but not as well as we can do with our new functionals. Here's our new local functional, which you can run, therefore, in programs that can't handle Hartree-Fock and which has good timing. We do okay on bonds. Our barriers, well, they're not great, but at least they're as good as B3-lip, which is widely used. 0.8, so we're doing okay on very good on non-covalent interactions. And transition metals, it's actually our best functional for transition metals. So we feel that we have got some broad-based functionals here. MO6 and MO6L are broad-based functionals. MO6 is better for barrier heights. MO6L is cheaper. If we're willing to leave this column blank, we'd get a number on that order. I didn't bring the number with me, but we don't recommend using it, so I left that blank. If you're willing to leave that column blank, you can go up to 54% Hartree-Fock. You do very well on bonds now. Your barriers are as good as couple cluster with triples and triple zeta basis set. And so that's pretty good. That's considered the gold standard by some people in chemistry. And non-covalent interactions, I already showed you, they're 3.5 times better than MP2. Okay, recently we decided to do some additional tests. I had a visitor, Gert-Jan Kroes from the Netherlands, and I was telling him about my density functionals, and he says the whole catalysis community uses RPBE. They're not going to believe you your functionals are good unless you test RPBE. Well, we had been a little bit lazy. We hadn't done that. We tested about 60 functionals, but we never tested RPBE. So I looked it up, and it had about 1,200 citations. So I said, okay, this is definitely being used. This actually came 1 year later than the RevPBE. You heard both of these this morning, actually, by Wai Tao Yang. Here's PBE 0, sometimes called PBE 1, has 25% It is. That's what can I say? Some people might know it by that name. It has 25% Hartree-Fock exchange designed to improve the behavior for organic chemistry. PBE sol, you heard about this morning. So how do these modified PBE functionals do for catalysis, where you'd like to get transition metals, main group bond energies, barrier heights, all correct? Okay, so we have some new database tests here. Here's transition metal bond energies, main group bond energies, barrier heights, which tend to be main group because that's where we know the barriers. And then I did an average of barriers and bond energies. So PBE. So here we see PBE, 13 for transition metals, 3 for main group bond energies, 8 kcals for barriers. And so when I do this average, I get 8.5. So RPBE and RevPBE are better in all respects than that, but they're not as good as this simple hybrid functional, PBE 0. And PBE sol isn't really designed for this, but I put it on there just anyway. Okay, so here's some of our functionals from Minnesota Group. I don't usually talk about this one, but actually this one we published a few years back, maybe 2005 we published it. We don't use it much ourselves because we like the Minnesota ones. But it is, I think, the best GGA. So if you put in no kinetic energy density and no Hartree-Fock exchange, you get this functional. Okay, here's our new functionals, ML5 and ML6. ML5 is just an early version of ML6. Here's ML6L. So this is the best functional without Hartree-Fock exchange, and here's our very best functional. So we're actually doing a bit better than our PBE. So I've got to send this preprint, which is not submitted yet, to Jan Ebert and tell him maybe the catalysis people should use our functionals rather than our PBE. So we were happy to see that result. So here we could put on a few other functionals. Here's BLIP. SIC often gives results similar to PBE. So those are standard GGAs now, as John mentioned this morning. Here's B3LIP, the one that's used by 80% of chemists. It's really outclassed by various functionals. And here's B97.3, David Tozer's. You see, David Tozer gets better barrier heights, better main group than some of these other ones, but his transition metals start to go to heck. So that's an illustration of this dichotomy that we heard about this morning. And so we've actually got these numbers for about 60, 70 different functionals by now, but I just showed these here today. So just to emphasize, with some of them have Hartree-Fock exchange, but ML6L is very general. It's the best without Hartree-Fock. The F somehow got lost there. Best without Hartree-Fock exchange. So you can do better than even B3LIP without Hartree-Fock exchange for chemistry. Here's a paper that we really like. It's a paper by Stefan Grimmie. Energy difference between two isomers of octane. These are both octane. They have the same number of carbons, the same number of hydrogens. One's branched, one's straight chain. Experiment says that the normal, the unbranched, is 2 kcals per mole higher in energy than the branched. MP2, which is wave function theory, second order perturbation theory, second order many body perturbation theory, plus 5. And density functional theory gets the wrong sign, often by a huge amount. BLIP is 10 in the wrong direction. So uh, Grimmie said, this is bad news for standard Kohn-Sham DFT. So Grimmie said, look, this is like Lewis octet structure, electron pair bonding. I mean, it's just a disposition of electron pairs in space. And he says, it seems difficult to obtain the necessary information about electron pairs and their interactions from simple considerations, thank you, of the density alone. He says, of course, we're not questioning that mathematically an accurate functional exists, but he says the human ability to find accurate density functionals is lacking. So we were very happy when we tried our functionals, and we beat even MP2. So we were very happy with that. And you know, a lot of our cases are cases that really are nothing like anything that was in our parameterization set. So our other functionals also all beat MP2. They're not quite as good as MO62X. There's no transition metals here. MO62X is the functional we would have recommended without doing the calculation. So why do we get that right? We think that the improved performance is due to this medium range correlation energy. We think it's the same thing that gives you these non-covalent interactions. Here's benzene, here's methane. So this is what people call dispersion-like. People call it dispersion-dominated, but I wouldn't say that. I'd say dispersion is where you have no overlap. So this is dispersion-like interaction. Here's MP2, well known to overbind. There's the potential curve for MP2. Here's couple cluster with triples and a complete basis set extrapolated to a complete basis set. It's right in there. And here's five of our functionals, four from our latest suite and the older one. And they're in the general qualitatively similar for this dispersion-like dominated one to the couple cluster. And here's some of the other density functionals. Many of them don't give binding at all. Here's Jan Martens, BMK gives this very strange curve. Here's PBE with and without Hartree-Fock exchange. B98 that Larry Curtis said was good for thermochemistry, but it's not good for this. So we feel we're getting that correct. And we think that's the same reason that we get the alkane isomerization right. Some people ask if we're getting the right answer for the right reason. Well, that's, of course, always difficult to know. The red line on these slides is zero. So here's the total. This is what you just saw before, our functionals versus the accurate one. Actually, the accurate one is right there in the middle somewhere, I think. And then here's what we get if we put in only the exchange functional. It's repulsive, as it should be. So we're not getting the attraction from a spurious exchange, as some of the early functionals did. And here's if we get the correlation. It's attractive. So it is coming from intermediate range correlation energy in our functionals. And so that's good. OK, here's the anionic gold cluster. So there's a lot of interesting gold clusters since the 1990s, actually, but more and more every year. Very hot subject because of their catalytic ability. The anionic gold clusters seem to have the most catalytic ability. You know, if you take a metal cluster, three of them must be planar. But the minute you get four, it could be non-planar, but five, six. So most of them, pretty quickly, four, five, six, you know, they start becoming non-planar. Neutral aluminum clusters are already non-planar, 3D in other words, at aluminum four. Cationic silver clusters already at five. Anionic clusters of silver, copper, and sodium at seven. Neutral and cationic gold clusters become 3D at n equal eight. But the anionic gold clusters become 3D at 12. Beautiful experiments by Manfred Kappes, trapped ion electron diffraction off of clusters. And most functionals actually predict that they'll be 2D even longer. Even though it's amazingly long that the planar structures stick in, most functionals seem to predict that they'll be 2D even longer. And the only three functionals we know of that get this transition right are MO6L, MO6, and this SOGA function, which is not a general functional. It's more like a PBE sol. It's not recommended for general use. Here's a paper I really liked by Hammer and coworkers in JAX this year. And he looked at both gold 13 negative ion and gold 8 cation. These are where the transitions occur from 2D to 3D. And he has the MO6L getting it right. And he's got other functionals that do not, well, they might get their spelling right, but they don't predict the structure right. So there's the planar structures in the 3D. So we seem to be OK for getting these harder geometric factors of the gold clusters. Grubbs catalysis is an interesting application for real materials. There's a picture of Grubbs. He won the Nobel Prize for developing these metathesis catalysts. And here, these are simple models of his catalyst. They have smaller ligands than the real catalyst. There's a ruthenium atom, and then there's these ligands. The ruthenium atom drops off a PH3 group. This is the pre-catalyst, makes the catalyst, and then it adds on this ethylene, and it makes a polymer, a polyolefin, polyethylene type. And it goes through a metallocycle intermediate, and So it's rather so we did accurate calculations on these models, and then we tested various density functionals. B3-lib, which is widely used for catalysis and chemistry, has an average error of 11 kcals on these structures, and our new functionals that we would recommend for transition metals, these are the only two we would recommend for transition metals, right? The others have higher Hartree-Fock exchange. They do quite well. So we're doing quite well. So then we did it in the opposite order. First of all, we had actually done the real catalyst. Here's the first generation catalyst. Here's the second generation catalyst. Here you have a cyclohexyl group on a phosphorus atom attached to the ruthenium. Here you're going from the pre-catalyst, a 16 electron system, to the catalyst, a 14 electron system. Bond association energies tell you how fast you'll produce the catalyst. The second generation catalyst, Grubbs would not have won the Nobel Prize if he only had the first generation. They're 100 to 1,000 times more active and have greater thermal and chemical stability, but you want to do limiting polymerization, they're generated more slowly. And so this bond association energy is larger. Bond association energy in the second case, thank you, is larger than in the first case. And there's a 3.4 kcal difference, and Melanie Sanford and Grubbs determined that, and they found that it was roughly independent of solvents, so we thought we could compare to gas phase calculations. So we did compare to gas phase calculations. Jeremy Harvey had pointed out that most density functionals have the wrong sign, and we did get the right sign. We got quite a bit larger bond energies than Jeremy Harvey had. We tried to understand what was causing that four kcal difference. So what we did was we removed the ruthenium chloride. You see, it's missing. And we still pulled this phosphorus off to go from the pre-catalyst to the catalyst. And here's the big cyclohexyl groups, and here's the big bulky ligand of the second generation catalyst. And we found the difference in this process here was 4.5 kcals. The difference in this process was 4.1 kcals. So the difference between these catalysts is attractive non-covalent interactions. And there's a lot of activity in this field, as you would imagine, since these are Nobel Prize winning catalysts. And we looked at least 100 papers, and I've talked to many of the people in the field. And as far as I can tell, nobody who is in the ligand design, so what they try to do is design better ligands to make better catalysts, has ever considered the attractive non-covalent interactions. They consider coordinate covalent bond strength and steric effects, repulsion between the bulky ligands. So this brings a new element in, because clearly this is very important for designing these catalysts. But actually, although they found that this difference was independent of solvent, Sanford and Grubbs found that in toluene, they could get an estimate of the absolute difference. And so our binding energies were quite a bit larger than theirs. We published them anyway, figuring at least we get the trend right, and we were very worried about that. And then Peter Chen at the ETH did a gas phase experiment. He did the gas phase thermochemistry of these catalysts. And this was 2008. Our results were published in 2007. And we agree just excellently with the absolute values from those catalysts. So this is an example of where we're comparing to experiment, data that's not in our, we have many examples of data that's not in our parameterization sets, and we seem to be doing pretty well. Zeolites. Zeolites are microporous aluminosilicates. Every drop of gasoline we burn in our car has seen at least one zeolite catalyst on its way through the refinery, says Joachim Sauer, whose picture is right there with his famous wife. And adsorption energy. So Sauer did best estimates. He actually did a 16 tetrahedral center zeolite cluster, and he did the adsorption energy of a pi of this isobutene in four different ways: as a pi complex, a tert butoxide, a tert butyl carbenium ion, and an isobutoxide. And he got these numbers. Here's a B3-lip down here, an average error of 17 kcals. Here's our functionals, 1.9, 2.6, 2.6. Even the Hartree-Fock functional does quite well for this. So it should be useful for catalysis. I'd like to just show this slide on electronic spectroscopy. I threw this in this morning because it was discussed this morning. Charge transfer excitations, and the idea is that you can't get them right with density functional theory. Here's three of them that we use as test cases: ammonia F2, ethylene C2F4, and tetracene. They all have charge transfer excitations, where in the excited state the charge has moved from one side of the molecule to the other. Okay, so here's 41 NARN charge transfer, valence and Rydberg states. MO62X does quite well compared to B3-lip, or compared to typical GGAs. PBE does similar to B-lip on these test sets. Here's the three charge transfer. You see, typical functionals are off by a huge amount, totally useless results, 4 eV, 6 eV, ML6HF with 100% Hartree-Fock nails these. Hartree-Fock with a lip doesn't nail them. It gets one EV. So you have to have the correlation, and you have to have the long-range non-self interaction. ML6-2X, of course, doesn't have 100% Hartree-Fock, so it's not going to get them right. And this bottom of this slide just shows that we actually do better on average than B3-lip, even though we have 100% Hartree-Fock. So we seem to be able to make a wide range of density functions with 0 to 100% Hartree-Fock. And this is just a summary then. ML6L is the first local functional. By local, we mean no Hartree-Fock exchange, with better overall performance than B3-lip. ML6HF is the first 100%. 100% Hartree-Fock exchange with better overall performance than B3-lip. It's excellent for charge transfer spectra. It's free of self-interaction at long range. ML6 is our desert island functional. Does seems to do quite well. And ML6-2X, if you leave out transition metals and a few other biradicals, is the best overall functional for main group thermochemistry, thermochemical kinetics, non-covalent interactions, medium-range correlation, energy valence, and Rydberg excited states. It has solved a number of problems that were people wrote papers on in the literature saying DFT fails. So, and all of our functionals have good medium-range correlation energy. They do well in non-covalent interactions. I'd like to thank my coworker Yan Zhao, who helped me to develop the Minnesota functionals, and the other people in my group who contributed calculations to the talk. Thank you.
Thank you for the nice talk. Are there some questions?
You convinced me that you have some very interesting functionals, but in many cases it makes me nervous to see you compare to experiments and you don't give any errors for the experimental numbers. For example, for zeolites, I can't imagine anybody can get binding energy to 3 or 4 kilocalories, so that could be 10 or...
Right. So the zeolite checks, there were two checks on the zeolites. One was against Zauer's calculations, which are presumably very accurate calculations, not experiments. And the others were against our own calculations on even smaller systems. So in the zeolite case, we are not comparing to experiment. Now, we're very sensitive to the fact that you don't want to just pick one experimental number and agree with it maybe by accident because of experimental error. We've tested our functionals on hundreds of data, both the converged theory and experiment. We've gone out of our way to try, we've spent an enormous amount of time, man years, literally, cleaning up our databases to try to make sure that we have only solid data in there. So, you know, we try to be as careful as we can. But in the talk, I didn't show any experimental error bars.
After all these impressive results, the obvious question is this the end of the road, or where do you go from here?
Well, we are trying to do better. We're looking at some additional issues, use of unoccupied orbitals, non-collinear DFT. We're trying to understand, are there some systems where this long-range tail of the van der Waals is more important? There was a claim today that there might be such a system. I don't know if it's true. Probably are some systems like that. We may need to try and get the van der Waals to even longer distances, but we seem to do quite well at van der Waals binding distances and at least halfway up the curve beyond that, but maybe we don't get the long range tail. We're actually looking at those too. And we haven't done any work on local functionals that Martin Kalp is using, but it looks really promising. So we're at a place where we're exploring various things. We're looking a little bit at range separation, we're looking a little bit at dispersion, we're looking a little bit at non-collinear, and we're looking a little bit at unoccupied orbitals, and we're thinking about local. So there are many directions you can try to go to improve.
Other questions? Here's one, yes.
Somewhere along the same line. In the morning you made a comment that maybe, I think it was to John Perdue, maybe one should use different functionals for geometry and for atomization energies. Now, in your talk, it didn't come again, and I wouldn't feel too happy having for the geometry. I mean, for every material, people are using already different functionals. Now, for geometry, for atomization energy, actually for spectroscopy, you also need a different functional, I guess. So my question, starting with this, is actually more what we want to hear at this conference, is more actually, where are your functionals behaving badly?
So
where should we improve them?
That's not really what I said to John. What I didn't say we should use different functionals for different properties. I tried to give a different perspective on this idea of why some functionals work for certain classes of properties better than others. Our goal has been to develop a broadly accurate functional. We felt when we got MO5 and then when we improved it with MO6 that we have, in some sense, the most broadly accurate functional that's available right now. Works well on geometries, energies, and spectroscopy. The one exception that you can't get with a general functional is charge transfer electronic excitation. You need 100% Hartree-Fock or a range-separated functional to do that. My own feeling is you'd be better off to start with a functional, and this is not rigorous argument, but you'd be better off to start with a functional that does pretty well on that before you put the range separation in, than to try to do everything with the range separation. But you can put these improvements in whatever order you want. But our goal has been to get a broadly accurate functional, and we think we do have one. So the question came up when we had MO6, should we publish MO6 2X? But you know, there are a lot of people who they spend their whole life working on organic chemistry. They don't use transition metals. We think it would be a shame for those people to forego the higher accuracy that they can get. But our functionals give good geometries. I mainly talked about energies today, but our functionals tend to give pretty good geometries. They certainly give useful geometries. So I would not recommend that you use one set of functionals for geometry and another one for energy.
May I ask a nasty question as an experimentalist? Do you have a physical insight why these or those functions are more adequate to this or that problem? Or is it just experimental work to try what works?
Well, whether you call it physical insight or insight, I think that very often I can look at a functional in the literature, and by looking at the functional form and how it was created, I can tell you without doing calculations, this will be bad for transition metals, it'll be bad for Rydberg states, it'll be bad for barrier heights, things like that. So I think we are developing a feeling for what kind of elements in a density functional are necessary to get certain types of properties. How you need to put the tau into the functional to get it to do everything you want it to do. I think we're developing a lot of insight into that. I guess you could call it physical insight, but yes, I think we're developing some insight.
So my question is about basis sets. When you develop your functionals, do you really do it at the basis set limit? Because in our experience, when we did MO6 calculations for S22 at the basis set limit, our errors were around 40% higher than what you show. So how is your, when you develop a functional, what do you do about the base?
Well, we typically use polarized triple zeta with a small number of diffuse functions. I don't think that we need more diffuse functions. Sometimes we use quadruple zeta. It is, when I do a comparison, I use the same basis set for everything in the test. And a lot of our parameterization is actually done with double zeta basis sets, so it's not as if we parameterized it in to work for a particular basis set. And typically our functionals do get better, but maybe in some cases they get worse when we go to better basis. Whereas B3 lip often gets worse when you go to better basis sets, like MP2, because it kind of has a cancellation of errors with small basis sets. I mean, that's always a problem. I think for main group, usually augmented triple zeta is good enough. But for transition metals, sometimes we go to quadruple zeta. But
yeah, I mean, my common goal is that I think one should separate numerical issues from physics. You know,
in an ideal world, we would do everything at the complete basis set limit. I totally agree.
Okay, John Perdue.
So, Don, I wonder, to what extent have you tested the MO6 functionals for the lattice constants and surface energies of solids?
Actually, MO6L did better than PBE-SOL for lattice constants of solids, and so we were pretty happy with that. So MO6L is I think, a very good, it's our best functional if you want to do only solids or transition metals, I would say. We haven't done surface energies. I'd like to do surface energies. We just haven't tooled up to be able to do that calculation. I think it's a real deficiency in our work that we haven't done the surface energies yet. You know, though, there was a paper on the gold clusters where people said that some other functionals were working okay. Actually, they were your functionals. because of they were doing good surface energies. But actually, our functionals, where we've never tested the surface energies, so they might be good, they might not, we don't know, did a little better for those problems. So I don't know how important the surface energies are. We've been trying to get Ann Mattson's functional up and tested, but we've been having some technical problems getting it to work in our program. So we want to get more into that surface energy business, but we haven't.
Okay, one more question.
I assume that one area where the Minnesota functionals would begin to break down is systems that are genuinely strongly correlated. So sort of simplest examples being things that have perhaps 50% biradicaloid character or antiferromagnetically coupled metals. Is this right that this would be still a frontier?
You know, Francesc Illas has, I think it is a frontier. And the biradicals are very difficult. Even ozone is very difficult. I think we do a little better on some of those problems than some of the conventional functionals, but that's still a place where you can have big errors by radicals. Francesc Illas has a test set of about 11 cases that he's used for single triplet splittings, what a chemist would say, a physicist would say magnetic coupling constants, I guess. And we actually checked our functionals on that set, and they did pretty well. We were very happy with that. You know, there's a controversy about how to do some of those systems. Some people take the singlets and they do this spin projection, and some people just say you should try to minimize it as much as you can. Interestingly, our functionals work pretty well both ways, whereas a lot of other functionals work well only one way. So if you really believe you know which of those two ways is better, you might have a functional you prefer to ours. But if you're not sure which is better, I think we probably did pretty sort of halfway between those, we tended to agree with experiment. So we're not the worst for that, and that's still a difficult problem for all functionals, I would say. So that's an area we all have to work on, these biradical systems, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Don, for a nice talk, and thanks to the audience for nice questions. We'll come to the next talk by Andreas Knorr.